When you realize that you are the wholeness that you might be seeking through someone else, all your decisions, all your actions, everything changes. You're no longer looking for someone to fix some part of you or to fulfill a void, because you realize that wholeness already exists within you.
Welcome to The Lavender Lifestyle, the podcast on personal growth and lifestyle design. My name's Eileen, and I'm here to guide you to shine as your brightest self and create your dream life. We all have a light within and the power to create a life we love. Every Sunday, we'll share thoughtful conversations exploring how we can build a better future for ourselves and our world. Life is an art. Make it your masterpiece. Hello, my loves. Welcome back to the Lavender Lifestyle Podcast. It's Eileen. In today's episode, we share a story of overcoming adversity and embracing self-love, healing, and the connection to spirit. I'm super excited to introduce today's guest, Vex King. Vex King is the number one Sunday Times bestselling author of Good Vibes, Good Life, and Healing is the New High, amongst other books and journals. As a child and young adult, he experienced many challenges. His father died when he was just a baby, his family were often homeless, and he grew up in troubled neighborhoods where he regularly experienced violence and racism. Despite this, Vex successfully turned his whole life around and is now leading a revolution for the next generation of spiritual seekers. Beyond his literary prowess, Vex's influence extends to coaching some of the biggest icons around, from world-class athletes and actors to musicians. As a major voice in the world of personal development, Vex shares deep spiritual knowledge in a way that's easy to understand, with stories from his own life, great inspirational quotes, and practical solutions. Hey, Vex, welcome to the podcast. How are you feeling today?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I feel good. I'm in a new home, so yeah, I'm surrounded by new energy. So yeah, I feel good.
Good. I'm so thankful that you made the time to come on the podcast, because I know you're super busy and you're transitioning right now. Why don't we start with your story? Because you have a very interesting story, from just overcoming a lot of adversity to like becoming a music producer, and then now doing what you do, best-selling author, entrepreneur.
Yeah, so I've had quite the journey. So 6 months after I was born, my father passed away. And my family and I were homeless for roughly 3 years, because the business my mum had with my dad eventually went bankrupt. There were themes like abusive family members, extreme levels of poverty at one point as well, especially during the homelessness period. And then even when we found a home, we were surrounded by violence, racism, injustice. So it seemed like my whole kind of childhood was just agony and pain and trauma. And I used to promise myself that one day I was going to change my life, not just for myself, but for my family. And, you know, that things would eventually get better. And I suppose like the people around me, because all they knew was heartache and pain and struggle, when I spoke about dreams of, you know, maybe having like a successful career, they couldn't quite understand, because pain and heartache was all they actually knew. And I felt like, I don't know, like speaking to the people around me, life seemed quite limited in that sense. And I didn't quite like the answer that my life would always look a certain way. So, for example, within our community, there were like religious members, and they would say like, God's put you in this position for a reason, which may be true. But you know, your life's going to stay like this, and it's not going to actually get much better. And you know, when you hear that as a child, and you know, you're going through hardship after hardship, you kind of don't like that answer. And I didn't agree to it. So as the internet started emerging, and I know I sound old now, but as the internet started becoming more popular, I think that was one of the blessings that I had, was access to the internet quite early. So I'm a really big like hip hop fan, and I used to go on this hip hop forum, and within the forum, they would have like sub forums, and there was a corner where I think it was called like the knowledge corner, and you'd speak about like philosophy, religion, neuroscience, history, and so forth. And I remember lots of people talking about a particular book that had changed Bruce Lee's life. Now, I was a massive martial arts fan as well, and you know, I found Bruce Lee are like a massive icon. And I'd never really read books, but because this particular book had changed Bruce Lee's life, I thought, right, I need to get access to it and maybe it can help me too. And it really introduced me to the idea of positive thinking. And then the more research I did...
What was that book called?
So it was called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
That's kind of like my entry point, I suppose, to this self-development world. And as I started reading that book and reading more on optimism, I started studying the most iconic individuals in the world. So, you know, from scientists like Albert Einstein and Tesla to, you know, world famous athletes like Michael Jordan. And I realized that it all ultimately came down to mindset. And there were people that had gone through bigger struggles than me that had achieved an immense amount of success. And that really, I think, reassured me because it showed me that your circumstance don't necessarily define your future. It's your response to your circumstances. So I really had to shift my mindset. And, you know, I started becoming, I would say, a preacher of positivity. This is where it kind of takes a turn because I did see massive improvements in my life. But I got to a point where I was suppressing everything, you know, that was undesirable, like feelings that would come to surface, my trauma, any pain, even other people's pain. It was like, no, I need to be positive because I want to manifest a positive life. And then went to like university. I was doing, you know, multiple things all at once. And I got to a really low point in my life where everything started crumbling and it just felt like everything was going wrong all at the same time. And during that time, you know, I didn't want to be here. And I decided like enough was enough, basically. And I attempted to take my life. And fortunately, I'm still here. But I felt like that was kind of not only just survival there. It was like a second chance. And it was a chance to do things right. And I said to myself that I completely believe in this, in the power of positivity, because I've seen the shifts, but the positivity has to be genuine. Otherwise, like, what's the point? Because all you're doing is really pushing things further into the back. And then eventually it comes out. And I wanted to find an organic journey towards positivity. And that's where self-love comes into the picture.
And this is when you're around university?
The day that I tried to, you know, take my life, I was in my final year of university. And then I'd kind of had an interest in, you know, an organic journey of self-love, but I didn't really know what it looked like. So I started meditating then. And that was, I think, one of the first things I started really doing to take care of myself and really understand myself. And I would ask myself questions and journal without knowing it was journaling, you know, like, why do I feel this way? Like, what caused me to react in a certain way?
It's time to take a break for today's sponsor, Shopify. In the early days of Lavender, I was everything all at once. The dreamer, the doer, the fixer. It seemed like every detail mattered and the weight of it all felt overwhelming. Eventually, I learned that having some support doesn't take away from the magic. It simply helps you shine brighter. That's where Shopify came in, like a built-in business partner that just gets it. Shopify powers millions of businesses, from big names like Mattel to creators just starting out. With hundreds of beautiful templates, AI tools for writing, plus marketing features that make reaching your audience easy, it helps you focus on what you love. It also supports everything behind the scenes, inventory, shipping, returns, so you don't have to worry. If you're ready to sell, you're ready for Shopify. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/TLL. Go to shopify.com/TLL. That's shopify.com/TLL. Can I ask, what was your environment like in that stage of your life? Like, did anyone, were the people around you trying to help you and supportive, or were you, like, I guess, where did you get your inspiration to like start journaling and meditating and that sort of thing?
That's actually a great question that I've never been asked. So it actually wasn't to do with anyone around me. No one around me was into like self-care or personal development. You know, everyone was just living their lives, even at university. And I think I was around people that were quite stable in terms of the environment. They hadn't quite gone through what I had gone through. They were in much stronger financial positions. So they didn't quite understand why I went to different outlets to look for answers. I was self-motivated to that sense, but with journaling, so I didn't realize I was always writing. I would write poetry in school, but I wouldn't share it with people because back then, like I was, I suppose, quite popular in school. And if I told all my friends I was writing poetry, you know, they'd probably say a couple of things, things about it. So it wouldn't have gone down as well, but I was always writing. But in terms of journaling, there wasn't anything, I suppose, on the internet, not where I looked, where there was like a step-by-step guide to like journaling. I would just write because it was my way of expressing how I felt in the moment. And I didn't actually realize that that was journaling. So after the suicide attempt, although I was writing anyway, like poetry, and I'd write reflections, I'd write questions to myself, like, you know, something might have happened in the day. How did that make you feel? And how can you respond better the next time? And, you know, these days we call that journaling. But I was just, you know, I suppose self-motivated, but I had no idea that I was journaling. This self-love wasn't really a term on my radar. Like, you know, social media wasn't that big. I think Facebook was around during that time, but Instagram or anything wasn't that big. So I didn't have labels for these things. Yep. All I knew was that I wanted to accept myself, the good and the bad, the light and the dark. And I suppose essentially that's what self-love comes down to. But yeah, the journey's just been, you know, I've tried all kinds of things. And this is one thing that I don't always talk about in my interviews, but even at university, I used to get approached by random people. So I was once in a bookstore. There's a bookstore called Waterstones in the UK, which is pretty big. I suppose it's similar to like Barnes and Noble in the US. And I was in the self-help section. I was flicking through a book looking for some kind of help. And this woman just came and touched me on my shoulder. And she said, you're here to do like big things. And, you know, you're going to change the world one day. And at the time, I just thought, oh my God, like, you know, this is someone that's a bit, maybe like a bit of a hippie and it's a bit woo-woo. And I just tried to kind of move away. And I'd get approached like several times. And I always, so even in my dorm in university, I had quotes all over the wall. I was always writing, but it just never clicked to me that I needed to write or communicate these ideas with the world. But after university, when I was in a corporate job, when I tell people this story, they always get chills. And to be fair, it sounds fabricated to some degree because it's so like crazy. But this is the reason why I kind of left my corporate job to do what I do. Every single day, I would commute to work via train. And I'd go to the train station. I'd go down the platforms. I'd go down these stairs. And I would wait on the left-hand side of the platform, because I knew that when the train would arrive, there would be the most seats available on that side of the train. And, you know, it's just one ordinary day. I'm going down, finish work, I go down to the platform, and there's a group of people there, but for some reason, they all move away from me. And I'm like, okay, this is really weird. Like, is there some strange body odor on me? I don't know. Like, people was just suddenly like fleeing away. And out of nowhere, well, it seems like nowhere, an elderly woman approaches me. And, you know, I've had elderly people and, you know, characters out of nowhere approach me. But she just starts telling me stories. And she starts telling me stories about my previous life. Now, I know not everyone believes in reincarnation. And, you know, I've born into a Hindu family. I've heard about reincarnation. I used to be very science-based. So it was like, well, if you can't prove it, then I don't know if it exists. Mm-hmm. But she started telling me these really fascinating stories about my past life. And then she said, you know, you're here for a purpose, right? And I was just like, okay. And she was basically saying that I needed to control my anger or something. And I have had anger issues when I was younger, but I was here to make a massive difference in the world. And it was through communication. And if I worked on the craft, then it will really change people's lives.
Talk about a clear sign. It's so clear.
Yeah, it's such a clear sign. But it was like, I've been told this so many times, but some of the stuff she was saying when she was, you know, telling me the story, she was trying to basically say why I am the way I am in this lifetime based on my previous lifetime. But some of the things she was saying was like, you know, it was like ticking a lot of boxes. And I thought, this is strange. Like, is this person a psychic? Like, who is this person? Was she troubled? Like, what's going on here? But I literally couldn't stop thinking about it. And then the train arrived. And this is where it gets really weird, right? The train arrived and she knew I was a bit skeptical. So she said something like, look, you don't have to believe me, but, you know, any advice is golden or something like that. And I said, well, you know, if I wanted to be kind. So I said, thank you for your time. It's been great speaking to you, but I'm going to go home now. And the train doors open and I step on and she said goodbye, but she said my name. And there was no badge. I don't know her. She's, you know, in a different generation. She said my name and she didn't say my pen name. And, you know, I never announced my real name, but she said my real name. And I turned around and she was gone.
That's so creepy. That's like a movie scene.
It was crazy. And I was trying to calculate. So there was like a pillar there and I was trying to calculate how long it would take her to, like, you know, get round the pillar. So she was, you know, unseen. And I was just like, and I literally couldn't stop thinking about it. And I dreamt about it for days. And that's when I thought to myself, people keep telling me I'm here to make a difference. I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I'm going to share pieces of myself. I write, let's just start with that. Let's see where it takes me. And here I am as an author of quite a few books now.
So did it start with posting your writing on Instagram, or what was like the first, I guess, format of your content?
Sure. So again, a lot of people don't know this. I used to have around 50 social media accounts, all under different names. And it was all inspired by Esther and Jerry Hicks, who I'm sure
you're all. I love them, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it was all about sharing good vibes, because I realized that the internet was quite a dark and troubling place. And I wanted to spread positivity online. It was all about keeping a high vibration. So I was just like, I like the idea of good vibes. And I'm not saying I created this, because there's no, you know, someone would have said good vibes only way before me. But I tried to, I suppose, advocate for this movement, good vibes only, through multiple channels. So I had a number of accounts. So some of these accounts were like quote accounts, for example, on Twitter, some on Tumblr, even on Pinterest, actually, but Instagram. But it was none of them were under Vex King. And then it wasn't until my wife, who is also on YouTube, she started like really blowing up.
Oh, so did you meet her before she was like doing YouTube, or?
I actually encouraged her to go onto YouTube.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And but the thing is, like, I always knew that she was, I don't know, I always knew that people would fall in love with her. And I know it's obviously I'm biased because she's my wife, but she's just a good person, very pure hearted, very bubbly. And YouTube just seemed to suit her personality. But even I didn't realize that she was going to blow up one day to the extent she did. And, you know, her channel's really taking off. And she turned around to me and she said, you know, like, you've got all these celebrities and all these people following your accounts and resharing your words without your name on it. And no one knows it's you. And I turned to her and I was just like, the thing is, if I post as me, like, I wear like snapbacks, I look much younger than I actually am, like, people might not take me seriously. And she was like, it doesn't matter. Just do you, just share your wisdom, because it clearly inspires so many people. So eventually I unloaded a lot of those accounts and I kept to the Vex King account.
So around what time was this?
The Vex King account that I have right now, I acquired in November 2015, I think it was.
Okay, yeah.
But I was on socials, say, doing things.
Anonymously.
From like 2012 or 11. To be fair, I used to have like Facebook while I was at uni, and I used to share, like, you know, your statuses that you have.
Oh, there would be quotes, right?
Yeah, there would be quotes. And sometimes there'd be rants if I wasn't feeling good. Even on MySpace, actually. Do you remember MySpace?
Yes. I think we're in the similar era. So I love talking about the internet evolution. And like when you talk about, 2015, I know exactly what the internet was back then. And the Tumblr amazing. And the Pinterest quotes. Yeah.
MySpace for me was one of my favorite ever platforms. And I'm so sad, but so happy for Tom because he's living his life now. But you know, you used to get like, I think you'd post bulletins and then you'd have like, I think was it bulletins on your page? I can't remember, but I remember I was producing music at the time and I remember posting one about like getting to know me and my thoughts. And I remember girls at my university, like, Vex, did you really write that? Because I didn't seem like the type of person that would write something so deep. And I was just like, yeah, I did. And they were like, no, you must have, like, obviously there's no AI back then, but they were like, no, like you must have copied it. I was just like, no, these are just my thoughts. And then even one of my uncles like read it and he was just like, you actually think like, are you an old soul? Like, how do you think of stuff like this? And I was just like, I don't know. And at university, I had a lecturer who said there was power in my writing and my ability to capture emotions, but you know, none of it clicked. None of it clicked to me. I thought I was going to be doing something completely different to writing.
Yeah, I love that writing has followed you really throughout your entire life. And I can relate to you too, because I'm also a similar type where I journaled before journaling was a thing to like heal yourself. I just did it to express myself. But anyway, I love hearing your story and to see how much you've grown everything. Like, I'm so proud of you. If you were to look back at the journey, then what do you believe were the keys to your success?
That's a really good question. I think the first definitely has to be mindset. Like I really shifted my mindset to see the light, even though a lot of my life was filled with the dark. Today, I actually posted a quote on Instagram and I said, like, count your blessings without denying your problems, because I suppose the physical world is all duality. So where there's dark, there has to be light. Where there's cold, there has to be warm. And I think although my life was incredibly difficult and I don't wish it on any single person, there were so many blessings, but it's also shaped me to who I am today. I don't know if you're like this, but I always end up on like nostalgia TikTok. And it's got like this cool music. And I look back and I'm like, I just feel like this sense of connection to the past. And I'm like, you know, but it's such a light and blissful feeling. And I think to myself, these were some of the most difficult years in my life, but they were also the most free. I felt so good in those moments, those simple moments that we're never going to get back. And I think when I started learning about mindset, I realized that although my life was difficult, I had a family. I had two sisters and a mom who deeply loved me, who supported me through the hard times. I had other loving members of a family. You know, I had food on the table at times. I was able to go to school. So there were still blessings in my life. And I think, you know, when you vibrate on the frequency of gratitude and you count your blessings, you receive more blessings to count. And I think that really become evident in my life. And it really, I think, built my self-belief, because as I started shifting my mindset, I started manifesting small things. And when you start manifesting small things, it breeds more confidence to manifest bigger things. And you continue to feed energy into that cycle. And eventually you end up, or like me, I've ended up where I am. But I'm also, and again, this is going to sound quite, I suppose, a little bit dark, but I am really thankful that I suppose I had like a reality check at the time that I tried to take my life, not for the incident itself, because, you know, that was horrific. And I actually promised myself that I'd do whatever it takes to never be in that position again. But if I hadn't gone through that, I don't think I would have pursued, you know, this wellness path, an organic wellness path. I would have continued to suppress my emotions and really build this facade of someone that's doing okay in life. And I just, you know, at a point in my life, I'm getting much older. I'm like, if it's not real, then, you know, what's the point? Like, it has to feel real. So yeah, I would say that they're the key things that have really helped me achieve what I have today.
Yeah, it's almost like there's a purpose to your pain. It's not that you would want anybody else to experience that pain or to even go back, but it because you've experienced the darkness, you appreciate the light and you it kind of propels you to the light.
Exactly. And it's exactly that. I think it's the law of polarity, which basically, you know, says that everything's kind of on the same spectrum. You don't know where, for example, hot and cold start, but you recognize the difference because of contrast. So you know what hot feels like because of your experience with the cold. And it's the same with me. Like, I know what good looks like, at least in my life, because of experiencing the bad. And I also think, like, my work, I like to believe, is filled with empathy. And maybe I wouldn't have had that empathy if I hadn't have gone through such a difficult life. Like, I'm 30, I forgot how old I was. I'm turning 38 in April. And, you know, I would say, like, the first 25 years minimum were extremely difficult for me. And it wasn't until post 30 where things started feeling a little bit lighter.
Time to take another break for today's sponsor, Cozy Earth. Creating a peaceful home starts with small, intentional choices, like choosing bedding and loungewear that feel like a soothing hug after a long day. That's exactly what Cozy Earth brings, softness that helps your body relax and your mind unwind. Their temperature-regulating sheets keep you cool all night, while ultra-soft pajamas make mornings feel calm and luxurious. Cozy Earth's durable fabric is designed to last, backed by a 10-year warranty so you can enjoy lasting comfort. Plus, Cozy Earth offers a 100-night sleep trial so you can experience their comfort risk-free and decide if it's right for you. Luxury shouldn't be out of reach. Use the code TLL for 40% off best-selling sheets, pajamas, and more at CozyEarth.com. Trust me, you won't regret it. Sanctuary awaits at Cozy Earth. Again, that's CozyEarth.com with the code TLL. All right, so Vex, next thing I'm super curious about is, what is your process for manifesting? Because you seem like a powerful manifester.
Do you know what? Over the years, it's changed quite a bit. It's evolved. And I've literally read probably every known manifestation book. I posted it once on Instagram, the manifestation books I've read, from everything from like Neville Goddard to Esther Hicks to some of the newer ones, like the ones that aren't really known. Like, I've read all of them because I feel like, you know, you get to a point, I think, sometimes where you start manifesting and then things plateau and you're like, am I missing something? So let me just read another book, and maybe the secret's in the next book. And you read and read and read, and really you're just collecting information when you could be just, you know, sticking to the principles. And in theory, like, manifestation really is simple. Everyone just has, I suppose, a different modality, a different way of teaching it. But my two key practices for manifestation, one of them is visualization. It always works. And the way I do it is, I do it at night. So just before I sleep, I just rehearse a scene, and I just continue rehearsing that scene, you know, initially through my senses. So I try to evoke, you know, every single, like, my taste, sound, you know, depending on what the scene is. And I just continue to replay it over and over again. And I actually think it's a great way of falling asleep, because your mind kind of gets exhausted doing it over and over again. But every time I've done that, I've always seen things come to fruition. And alongside that, I have a vision board. So that just really primes my mind to seek opportunities that will help me lead, you know, help me towards the goal. Again, I can't, you know, name the number of things that have eventually manifested off my vision board. So I'm constantly updating it. I'm refreshing it with new goals. But the second thing that really has helped me is writing your goals down. And I did this thing where I would write a goal down. And this is when I had no money in my bank account. So when I left my corporate job, usually I would say to people is take a calculated risk. So, you know, take the risk, but make sure you've got enough of a buffer that you'll survive, especially when it's you've got financial responsibilities. But I did the complete opposite to that because I suppose I'm just a bit of a risk taker. And there's a point where I didn't really have much money in my account. But I would write a figure out in my notepad and I'd write it out every single day. Like I would just write the same, and it was a really random figure, and I would just write it out every single day. And this was like it started as a five figure number, because I didn't have literally anything in my account. And then I changed it to a six figure number. And I kid you not, there was one day I looked into my account and I saw a number and I was just like, why does this look so familiar? And this was like years later.
Yeah.
I was like, why does this look so familiar? I was like, is this the number I wrote in my notepad? And I keep these notepads. So I found the notepad and I looked through it, and it was that particular number exact to the penny that I'd written out.
It had decimals, like
it was a six-figure number, point, you know, whatever it was, like 28 pence or something. Like it was something just really, really random. I just made a number up and I'd written it out, like, I don't know how many pages, like 100 pages of this notebook over and over again. And that's why me and my wife actually have a manifestation journal, because we really believe in the power of writing your goals down. Like we started then journaling, we're not even journaling, like we started writing an affirmative statement out together. So even this house that I'm in, we wrote about this house together. And we wrote out our goals together, and, you know, stuff slowly. I'm not going to, you know, pretend like I've manifested every single goal in the world. And I think any coach that says that is probably trying to really maybe sell you something, because the thing is, there are other laws in the universe, but I really believe that we co-create our reality. And sometimes things might not manifest because they're not meant for you as well. I strongly believe in that. And also we change, our goals change over time. Like the things that used to motivate me or that I used to desire are no longer desirable to me. And that's okay, because, you know, changes are only constant in life.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so I definitely want to ask you about your new book, Things No One Taught Us About Love. So what inspired you to write this book?
So a book on relationships was always on the cards, because every time I would post relationship content on Instagram, it would do really well. And because my wife's like a public figure, although she does something, well, she used to do something quite different to me. She used to do like beauty and makeup tutorials. Like she was always in her own lane and I was always in my lane, and we never really crossed over. But doing a book on like relationships or couple goals was like an easy sell for me. And I refused to do it because I was just like, I don't want to do something that's an easy sell, or that's going to be cheesy or cringy, and I don't want to put my own relationship on a pedestal. So I was like, I'm not going to do the book. So I focused on other books. But if you read my DMs, I get asked hundreds, maybe thousands of times in a day about relationships. It's always like, you know, I'm with Tony and Tony won't do this. Should I leave him or should I stay? And, you know, it's A, I don't know Tony. B, I don't know the context. And C, yeah, the decision is yours to make. So how can I help you make that decision? I can teach you what I've learned about love and relationships based on my own relationship, not just with my wife, but with my friends and family, and also my spiritual learnings around love as well. Because I've read a lot of books on love and relationships, but I find that they're either from like a psychological perspective, and I think that's really helpful, or they're purely spiritual. And it's kind of like, how do the two meet? Because, you know, we're souls having this kind of like physical experience. So how does this idea of unconditional love, for example, play out in theory? Because Does it mean that we just tolerate, you know, narcissism or abuse? Surely not. So, you know, I really wanted to answer the most frequently asked questions I was receiving on social media, but also kind of trying to iron out some of the discrepancies and the conflicts that, you know, I saw a lot online and on blogs or within other books as well.
Yeah. So what's one of the concepts in this book that you're most proud of? Like, if there's one piece that you wish everyone knew, or maybe something that's different from the books that you've read about relationships in the past.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's the idea that love is a state of being and relationships are a state of doing. So Eckhart Tolle, again, an amazing teacher.
Love him.
And I love how he talks about the concept of presence and awareness and, you know, some people call it loving awareness because, you know, I follow kind of like a non-dualistic school of thought, and we talk about ourself or our true nature, and our true nature is essentially consciousness, and consciousness radiates light and love. And that's where you get this idea of love and light from. But even those ideas of love and light are human concepts, they're egoic concepts. It's our way of understanding something that's beyond the mind. And I wanted to show people that actually the love that you're seeking outside of yourself is you. It's your nature. It's almost like the material nature of all things in this world. Everything comes, or everything's born of source, and that source is pure love. It's almost like, take gold, for example. If love was gold, the physical world, the manifestation of this physical world, you get jewelry or other things that are made of gold, is just the form version of gold. In the same way, everything in this world is the form version of love. And I think putting that idea out into the world and having maybe a somewhat commercial book speak about something like that, you know, something some people would consider woo-woo, would be, I suppose, you know, almost like, I suppose some publishers would be like, no, don't put that out there because it's, you know, it's not commercial enough. It's too spiritual. And I really wanted to share that idea that you are love and show people that you are love, and that the love that you're seeking outside of yourself is actually within you already.
Yeah.
I'm really proud that I was able to do that in this book. I went back and forth. So I have a couple of teachers around the world, but one of my non-dualistic teachers, I send my work to him to check for spiritual precision, to make sure that the ideas I'm conveying correctly. And I also then send things to my wife so I can ensure that the ideas are accessible. And that's how I kind of achieved this balance of trying to offer something that's maybe inaccessible in terms of spirituality in a way that people can really read it and understand it, maybe through analogies or something else. So sometimes, you know, it can be quite a difficult process because my spiritual teacher would be like, yeah, you've not quite said this correctly. Maybe you should try and frame it in this way. And then I'll do it and I'll send it to my wife and she'll be like, I don't get what that means.
I love this so much because it's so you, right? You're the bridge between those like deep spiritual philosophical concepts and then the down to earth real people. Because I think that's also part of why you're so successful, is you can reach so many just regular people, everyday people who aren't into like the woo-woo parts, because you just make it more real. I think it all ties back to just even your image. You just look like a normal guy. It's kind of like how you thought you didn't look like the person to be writing these deep things. But I think it's all part of your brand and it's part of your power, actually.
Oh, thank you. That's so kind of you. It's funny because, you know, even like I've been to like masterminds and marketing conferences and, you know, they talk about like branding, for example. I know it doesn't make sense, but I don't see myself as a brand. I don't, you know, I'm not fond of the labels, but I understand why they're needed because, you know, they provide clarity to people. Even on my Instagram point at one point, I think as my bio is like the guy who likes to make people feel good. But, you know, for someone that comes on to my Instagram page, you're like, okay, so what does this guy actually do? So then I changed it to like author or self-love writer or something. You know, I'm not trying to be anything other than true to myself, because I've been untrue to myself and I ended up in a very dark place. So that's the only thing I can do.
I mean, all you need to do is be true to yourself. And when we say brand, it's just like how other people see you.
Sure. It's the perception. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I also want you to talk about the concept of self-love in relationships. It's similar to what you mentioned, that we are seeking the love that we are, but maybe for our listeners who are also dealing with relationship problems, I know a lot of people are, how do you remind people that the importance of tapping into our own love first?
Yeah, it's interesting. Self-love is, a lot of people talk about loving yourself and, you know, self-love, but no one really tells you like how to do it and what it means. Yeah. There's one thing that I'd like to say, you know, before I talk about self-love, is that we always talk about our other half or a better half, for example, when we talk about partners, but that then assumes that we're not whole. And the idea of my book is that we are whole, we were always whole, and actually we've just forgotten that due to our conditioning and the trauma that we may have faced in our lives. And self-love is really returning to that sense of wholeness. We try to look for homes in other people, but actually our power is coming home to ourselves and then finding someone who's a worthy match. And that's why self-love is so important. And I talk about two types of self-love. So the self-love, as most people understand, is just your daily commitment to nourishing your mind, body, and spirit. So self-care falls into it, but it's really doing activities or practices that return you to a sense of wholeness. And that could mean something simple as going to the gym. It could be staying true to your purpose. It could be doing a self-care activity. It could be a number of things. And those things really help you feel or give you that sense of wholeness. But the other form of self-love, so that would that first self-love that I described would be like the lowercase self-love. The other form of self-love is the uppercase self-love. And the reason I call it the uppercase self-love, because in Hinduism, especially in the books called the Upanishads, they say that consciousness, your true nature, is the self, Atma, or, you know, awareness. And true self-love is really returning to that connection of wholeness. It's feeling, experiencing, sensing something beyond yourself that is essentially a reflection of who you are. And in the book, I describe it as the sun. It's, you know, it's consciousness. It's always radiating love and light, and it shines on everything and everyone. And, you know, if it shines on rubbish on the streets, it doesn't make it less, you know, shiny. It doesn't impact the warmth and the glow of the consciousness itself. But it's always there. It's something that's unchanging. And we sometimes experience those deep connections to the self. It could be like when we're in nature, for example. Some people experience it through meditation. And essentially, it's almost like an awakening. It's when you realize that you are not your mind, your body, your dreams, you know, your thoughts. You are something beyond that. And when we return to that, let's call it spirit, self-love then becomes a practice in making decisions and taking actions from that place of connection to your true self. So when we return to a state of wholeness, we make better decisions for ourselves, and we then no longer look for someone to complete us. We look for someone to complement us. And I think that's the key to a thriving relationship. A lot of the times we go into relationships hoping that someone will, I don't know, boost our self-esteem or, you know, help us live out our dreams. And, you know, those things can come in a healthy dynamic. But when you realize that you are the wholeness that you might be seeking through someone else, all your decisions, all your actions, everything changes. You're no longer looking for someone to fix some part of you or to fulfill a void, because you realize that that wholeness already exists within you.
Yeah. I love that so much. Too often we depend on another person or put so many expectations on the other person, and it's not correctly placed. Like, it's really anything that you're unhappy with or any expectations, like ask yourself, am I giving myself what I need?
Exactly that. And I think it puts so much pressure on the other person to perform in a certain way. And that love just becomes conditional. It's tied to what that person does. And for me, true love, or the purest form of love, happens in the present moment. So it's not based on images, your imagination, what happened in the past, or what's going to happen in the future. It's what's happening now. And whatever's happening now has to be perceived from a place of acceptance. Authentic love is full of acceptance, not expectation. If it's filled with expectation, it's based on dependency, attachment, and fear. I really wanted to make those things clear, but also show people how they play out in relationships. Because, you know, again, with what you said about expectations, I think we're always going to have some expectations within a relationship, but it's trying to identify which expectations are healthy and which ones are unhealthy, which demands only we can fulfill and which demands are fair in a relationship.
Yeah, totally. Another thing I do want to ask you about is healing, because I've healed through a lot of trauma. I know you've healed through a lot of trauma, but everyone's healing process looks different. And I guess the ways in which you heal are different. I'm sure you've tried an array of things. So tell us, what are the ways that have helped you heal from your trauma?
Yeah, I think healing's like this, what, non-linear, ongoing journey. It's not got a definite end at any point, unless, you know, you reach a point of nirvana, if you believe in Buddhism. You know, when does the healing end? So I suppose we're all on this kind of journey of healing to some degree. And it's really just a case of unlearning everything life's taught us that is limiting us. If I be completely honest with you, since I was a teenager, I've tried so many modalities for healing. I was in such a desperate place in my life that I needed a solution. And even when I only had like a few pounds to my name, I would spend them on some kind of healer or something, you know, someone that would promise me some kind of lightness, some kind of results. And I think it was during then I realized that a lot of people actually didn't care about me or my financial position. All they cared about was filling their pockets up. And that's why the way I approach my work now is I'm not trying to sell people dreams. I'm just trying to be honest. And I always tell people is to find what works for you, because there are some things that might not work for you, and that's okay. There's so many different paths leading us all to the same place. For me, the biggest change, that I've been meditating for around 17 years, and meditation has really, really, you know, drastically changed my life. But again, I understand that if you have a mind that's constantly busy, it'll be very difficult to actually engage in the practice of genuine meditation.
Wait, can I ask how you meditate? Like, what's your practice look like?
It's changed over the years. You know, I've tried like Vipassana, Transcendental, Mantra, Binaural. I tried all of them. But if I be honest with you, like right now, my meditation is simply closing my eyes. You could say focusing on the breath. That's what I used to do, is I used to just close my eyes and focus on my breath and then let, you know, kind of the activities of the mind fade away. But I'm fortunately, I think, at this point where I can kind of close my eyes and it's almost like instant detachment from the mind. So there's nothing glamorous or fancy about my meditation. It's I meditate every single day. I have a meditation chair. I actually have a room devoted to meditation in my last house. I'm creating one in this house as well. But it's my non-negotiable every single day. Like I wake up and the first thing I do after I've gotten ready is I sit down and meditate. There's actually a practice in my latest book, Things No One Talks About Love, and it's a Hawaiian practice of Hakalau. It's a form of meditation, and it's basically about using your peripheral vision. And, you know, to just very simply explain it, and I think this is life-changing. So you can look ahead and focus on just one particular point right ahead of you. And then you just widen your gaze without moving your eyes. left and right. So you start noticing what's on the kind of furthest corner of your room on each side. And then if you can, you try and do it top to bottom as well. And you'll start to realize that you almost instantly quieten your mind. And I think even if you can just do that few moments in the day, your relationship with the world changes, and you can, you know, almost access this uppercase self-love, this big S self-love. You start to feel that connection, but you don't rationalize it. You don't evaluate it through thoughts. It's just through this knowingness or awareness. And this is what I think I find quite difficult to write about in my work, is the transmission from something that's beyond mind and language to then use language and mind to describe what's been experienced through this subjective awareness. That's what I love doing. So,
yeah. Going back, so you shared meditation. Continue sharing a little bit more about how you've healed. What has worked for you?
One aspect is definitely finding more moments of presence in my life has helped for me. And just regulating my nervous system through deep breathing. I think sometimes we go into fight or flight mode. Like, I've experienced some horrific things. You know, I've seen like guns to my uncle's head and my mum's and auntie's, you know, getting attacked while I was like probably like 5 years old and feeling powerless. Gosh. And, you know, from that moment on, I always felt like threat was around me and I was hypervigilant. I was always on my toes, thinking that something was going to happen to me, that I had to protect myself and my family. So my nervous system was always kind of like spiking in fight or flight mode. And it wasn't until I started really focusing on taking deep breaths and being where my feet are and not where my mind is, that I was able to really regulate my nervous system. Now, I haven't actually been to therapy, but I have so many friends that are therapists and so many friends that have been to therapy. And, you know, they talk about their experiences with like somatic healing, for example, or, you know, just like counseling, for example. And that's what's worked for them. And I think that's so important that you find whatever works for you. But another thing that's really helped me is just rewriting limiting beliefs. And literally, when I say rewriting them, I mean like literally replacing them, writing them out, you know, with pen and paper and burning them away. Cause I'm sure there's, you know, a spiritual aspect to this, but I sometimes list out my limiting beliefs. I replace them on a different page, but then I would like scrunch the paper up and just, you know, light them in my garden and just burn away. And it's almost like I'm letting go now of these beliefs and I'm starting to strengthen these new beliefs. And the more you practice the new beliefs, whether it's through affirmations or finding evidence in your own life to support these new beliefs, you strengthen those neural pathways in your brain. And then obviously the more you practice it, the deeper they get. But that's really helped me heal and move on from some of the, I suppose, unhealthy conditioning that I'd picked up through my childhood and my past.
Yeah, I love that idea. Thanks for sharing. No worries. I'm also really curious what your creative process is like. Are you writing every day? What inspires you? And how do you make sure how are you continuously creative? Do you get burnt out or do you know how to be sustainable with it?
Yeah, I definitely get burnt out. And I think I should mention that first is burnout. I think it's a very big thing in this generation. Like, we've got this like hustle / productivity culture. And if you listen to podcasts, I don't know if any guests have done this on your podcast, but people will come on and they'll talk about their morning routine. And by 5 a.m., they've done like a million things.
Yeah.
And then by 7 a.m., they've added other things.
Yeah, I'm not that kind of person. But yeah.
The thing is, they're not sustainable. They're also not always accurate. Like, people just say stuff because it sounds good. But, you know, a lot of the times, like when I was burning out, I realized that it was my relationship with rest that was a problem. I saw my mum literally slaving away, trying to put food on the table. So I didn't see her having rest. I also felt this immense pressure to break my family out of poverty. And I felt like if I paused, I'd be perceived as lazy or I wasn't trying hard enough. And I was scared of failure. So I would work and work and work. And I suppose that was something I needed to heal from as well, is to realize that actually, A, my life isn't as difficult as it was in the past. So I'm allowed to rest, and actually rest helps nourish me so I can do more when I am productive. But with productivity, you know, as a writer and as a creative yourself, I'm sure you can agree, is it comes in like spurts, like it will just come in a moment. And I just stay true to the timing. Obviously, if it comes at midnight and I'm in bed, I probably won't jump out of bed anymore. I used to, but I won't. But I just, I write when I feel like writing, and it's always at awkward times. It's in between sets when I'm in the gym, but I'll carry on writing.
Wow.
I write a lot in my notes, actually. Yeah. While I'm in the shower, I'm having all those shower thoughts. So I'm out the shower, drying myself up, and then writing things down. And just sometimes throughout the day, like after meditation, I get a lot of ideas come to me. So meditation really helps me channel spirit to some degree. And I get a lot of inspiration, but I write every single day for the last, I don't know how many years it's been, you know, I'd probably make up a number if I said, but it's been way over a decade. I've written at least 500 words every single day. Like even now to this point, I've got probably 1 million words worth of writing just on like my Google Drive, just because I'm constantly writing. It's my way of expressing myself and my way of also capturing what I'm thinking. I'm not always the best at communicating my thoughts. And that's why I'm a writer, because I like to take my time and write things out. I just write when I feel inspired. And if I don't feel inspired, I go out and look for inspiration. And my inspiration comes from like anywhere, literally. Sometimes it's just out in nature. Sometimes it's a conversation with a friend. A lot of the times it's music. It's other forms of creativity. Because I think a lot of the times what that's doing is good creativity, and I say good in the sense of authentic, organic creativity, is really someone channeling that energy straight from source.
Yes.
And they're putting it out there. And then when the consumer hears it, that feeling is returning them back to that sense of wholeness.
Yeah.
Right?
I love that so much. I agree.
Yeah. Yes. And it's love flowing into love. And that's essentially, you know, that's another concept in my book, is love flowing into love. So that's why I feel like art is so important in this world, because it's almost reminding you that you are whole. And it's a form, someone's form of love, helping you realize that you are love yourself as well.
So beautiful. I agree wholeheartedly as a creative and as someone who has felt, you know, me being tapped into spirituality sometimes, and I'm in the flow of creating and it feels so good, but also experiencing other creations like music and art, it really inspires me. But it makes sense when you put it that way. It inspires me because it reminds me of that connection.
Yeah, it does. And that's why, it's, you know, art can make you feel so deeply sometimes. Like you can watch, you know, even a TV show, and it's, you know, not only does it sometimes make you feel seen and validated, but it just, it reminds you of the wholeness that exists within. And that's why I've just got so much love for other creatives, because it's so special, the work that they're doing.
Yeah. All right, Vex, I feel like we can go on for hours, and I would love to have you back another time, but I think we should wrap up. If you could leave the listeners with just one final message, what would that message be?
I was going to go down the wholeness angle, but I'm actually going to go down a different angle. And I'm just going to say is, stay true to yourself. I know it sounds cliche, but I think we're in a world where everything's become quite performative. A lot of it's based on seeking acceptance from society. And I think that if you have a calling, stay true to it. If you have values, stick by them. The world's going to tell you to do and be all kinds of things, but your greatest asset is you, and your greatest work is going to come from you staying loyal to your own creativity. So stay true to you.
Amazing. All right. Lastly, where can we find you online?
So thankfully, I've made it easy. I'm just Vex King everywhere. I'm mostly on Instagram, Vex King. I kind of post to X, although I'm not loving it at the moment. But yeah, Vex King, Threads, Twitter, Instagram. I'm not sure if I'm on Pinterest. I might be, but yeah, Vex King.
And all of his books. We'll link everything down below so you guys can check more of Vex's work. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I loved it. Great conversation.
Thank you so much. Thank you for making time for me. I know we've been trying to get this in, so it's great to finally speak.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening to The Lavender Lifestyle. If you like the podcast, please show your support by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also subscribe to our podcast YouTube channel at youtube.com/lavenderlifestyle. Lastly, follow me on YouTube and Instagram at Lavender for more content on creating your dream life. Sending you so much love. Bye.